So it's a year next week since Donald Trump was elected, and thousands of Americans have registered to attend an unusual protest this week to mark the anniversary. They'll gather in cities like Boston, New York, Miami, Austin, for what organisers describe as a collective cathartic yell into the heavens about the current political establishment. Only in America, you might say. What we'd like to focus on today is an intriguing related story. How are the Democrats, the Trump opposition after all, how are they travelling? Not well at the four special elections held in the wake of the presidential election, something akin to our by-elections, where they've been defeated. And some of the headlines in the seemingly endless commentary have been harsh. The silence of the Democrats, and Democrats are becoming all they claim to hate. They're just two. So why such a predicament? David Marks, a political writer and executive editor at a firm called Morning Consult, which conducts regular political polling in the US, and I'm pleased to welcome him to the program. Hello there.
Hello, good to be with you.
Is there any evidence emerging of the Democrats sort of coalescing and gathering steam after the failure of last year's election?
Actually, it looks like the momentum is kind of going the other way. It's still a bit early to say because we haven't had a lot of test cases, but there is an important race coming up just this Tuesday, the gubernatorial election in the state of Virginia, which is a state that has voted for Democratic nominees three times in a row, Barack Obama twice, and then Hillary Clinton in 2016. And if Democrats do not win that governorship, it means big trouble for them. So they've got some real challenges on their hands, and it's still not clear they really know what they stand for and how to persuade people that might be open to going to their side.
How has this occurred? Has this been a long... I see one of a commentator suggests that the Democrats are into an epic transformation, really, a transformative phase that's underway, and that you can't hurry it up. Do you see it like that?
Yes, I think both.
They're moving back to the left. They're moving back to the left, away from the neoliberal sort of center to center right. Moving back to the left. This was the contention.
Right, or at least the center. And this is the fight that's been going on within the Democratic coalition for decades now, really going back to the election of Bill Clinton in 1992, almost exactly 25 years ago, when a lot of traditional Democrats kind of gritted their teeth and they were willing to accept some of the compromises that he made toward the center in terms of going toward the center. But times have changed, and particularly in the social media age, it's hard to have any real party leaders. Everybody's got their own opinion. Coalitions come out of different places. It's really diffuse, and that makes it very difficult to try and move the party in any one direction. But at this point, the energy is probably more on the left, the Bernie Sanders side. The problem for Democrats is that's politically suicidal. That is nowhere near a majority viewpoint or position across the United States. It's not the way to win national elections.
Okay, now I know there's a lot of debate about precisely sort of this versus, say, Nancy Pelosi from California, who is now 77. Now, I don't want to be ageist, but she seems to be taking the lead. She's almost become the de facto head of the Democrats, and it doesn't feel like renewal, you know, for a person of that age.
Right. It's a real conundrum for the Democrats in that her leadership position within the House of Representatives, heading the opposition, the Democrats, is probably secure because the only Democrats that are left there are essentially cut from the same cloth. They're pretty close to her ideologically. They come from coastal districts. She's from San Francisco. They might be from Los Angeles, New York City, Seattle, those sorts of places. So she's probably secure within her leadership position, but that's probably not the face Democrats want to have as their leaders. It's actually not just her. Her top two lieutenants, the second and third in command of the House Democrats, are also around the same age, 76, 77, something of that nature. And it's really not allowing much of a farm team to come up and grow the next generation, and that's becoming an increasing problem for the Democrats. Even in the 2016 race, you had Hillary Clinton, who was nearing 70, against Bernie Sanders, who was well over age 70, running for the Democratic nomination.
Yes, I mean, it is interesting. She has become, she's such an interesting woman, the official face of the resistance. This is what it's been described as in a Washington Post article. And interestingly, even though she's from California and she's, you know, positioned as representing that particular type of liberal approach. But this piece in the Washington Post said this is a fierceness from her. She's very uncompromising, born not from the frontier liberalism of San Francisco, but from the calculating ethnic big city politics of Baltimore, where her congressman turned mayor father regularly displayed the cold mathematics of coalition building in their living room, which also served as his headquarters. Now, I'd never heard that before.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Nancy Pelosi, she's not an effete, you might say, white wine-sipping liberal in the American sense, a Democratic politician. She is, as gritty is a good term, she is very tough in how she conducts politics. And during her 4 years as House Speaker, the head of the House of Representatives, third in line for the presidency, she displayed that. She made all kinds of legislative deals that upset some of her own members. And I think she'll actually go down as one of the better speakers in American history. That's not an ideological statement. I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with her policies, but just in terms of her effectiveness. Probably she should have just stood down after Democrats lost the majority in 2010. By that point, she had already been in Congress for 23 plus years and would have been a good time to kind of bow out gracefully. But she's not somebody who quits in that way.
Well, how would you describe the opposition that they are offering then? Because if she is so strategically clever, even if she does stir up quite a lot of issues within the party, and I'll come back to that, but how's she gone in terms of thwarting the Republicans and Donald Trump?
She's actually been about as effective probably as a House minority leader can be, in that if you're in the House minority, you really have very little power. It almost doesn't matter if you show up each day because the rules are set to favor the majority party almost completely, with a couple of exceptions. And so she's held her caucus together opposing Trump pretty well. But that's different than putting forward a positive program and selling people on voting for the Democrats favorably, and that's something that's still missing.
So is there any transformative leader coming through or even threatening to come through? Is anybody able to put forward, you know, anything, anybody like a Roosevelt or even, dare I say, a Bill Clinton?
Well, it's at this point, no, but that doesn't mean there won't be. And a lot of these kind of figures actually arrived on the national scene kind of in a burst, whether it was FDR or Barack Obama, or even going maybe in a non-elected official sense, Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement and others, where they just kind of burst on the scene and they catch a wave of public affirmation. And so far, that has not really happened. I think a lot of the people who are positioning themselves to be the voice of the opposition are just having trouble articulating things and talking in such a clear way like Donald Trump does. No matter how much one might disagree with the things he says, he catches people's attention. And Democrats tend to speak in five-point programs and speak in multi-clause sentences, which is probably the right way to govern, but it does not necessarily attract people and get them excited about voting for you.
Well, why, in your view, has this happened? I mean, why has this venerable party not been able to throw up what we'd say in Australia, a retail politician who knows about slogans apart from anything else?
Yeah, it's a conundrum. And it's still possible that somebody would emerge. And there have been those, as discussed, with Bill Clinton and others in the past. But it's become much more difficult, I think, for any elected official to break through. That's one of the reasons, I think, for Donald Trump's success and why in the Republican primaries he beat 16 other establishment Republicans. And yet Democrats have not been able to put forth that kind of a forceful personality that can really get people excited. And It's always a tough case to make for Democrats, too, because they're calling for more activist government. And whatever the merits of that, it's tougher to say that than say, hey, we're just going to give a tax cut or go after this group or that the way Donald Trump does. To be more affirmative and uplifting, that's just much more difficult to distill into a shorter message.
Mm. Now, obviously, this is about identity politics, and people have commented for a long time that the Democrats were sort of assailed by identity politics. And as I understand it, they do deal very well with lots of different groups, minority groups like, you know, LGBTQ, you know, Jewish, Muslim, Asian, blah, blah. If they did very well with all of those groups, could they get to government?
Well, that's what happened partly with President Barack Obama when he won twice, and he was able to harness this coalition of all those groups you just mentioned and more broadly younger people and, I might add, kind of mainstream center-left white people in America, who usually from the professional class and don't like social policies of Republicans and other such matters. And I don't think the minority vote on, in and of itself is probably enough, but add that on to 30-plus percent of the white vote, and you might have a winning coalition there. The problem is, for Democrats, nobody but Barack Obama has been able to achieve that. And they've tried it in other off-year elections in 2010 and 2014, and it was not successful. It's really not transferable, as Hillary Clinton found out the right way.
But Bill Clinton did it, didn't he?
He did. He did do a version of that, but you need a political all-star to be able to do that, somebody who shines through. Those don't come around very often, and Democrats have to find a way to be able to do that on a more regular basis or find a way to win a lot more of the working-class white vote, and that has proved a real conundrum, and that's where the Democrats, I think, are really making some bad strategic decisions by going with identity politics and identifying with, say, Black Lives Matter, which is a group that has a lot of criticism for police and law enforcement tactics and whatever legitimate issues for concern and discussion there are. That's not the way the majority of people see law enforcement in America, where they see law enforcement as by default the opponent or the enemy or something of that, or guilty until proven innocent. So I think Democrats need to move away from that and much more toward mainstream consensus.
New narratives required. David Mark, thank you very much for those insights.
Thank you.
David Mark is the executive editor at The Morning Consult, and he's also the author of a range of books, Dog Whistles, Walkbacks and Washington Handshakes. And we'll put the details in our website. In fact, I think that is one book, Dog Whistles, Walkbacks and Washington Handshakes. Sorry about that.